And Christmas Carol.
It's the beginning of a Christmas Carol. Come on. We did good.
We'll figure that out. We'll get a tune out of it.
Right? I've lost dog.
All right. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Bruce.
Present.
Councilmember Biggs.
Present.
Councilmember Laraway.
Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And if you will join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item is the consent agenda. Any questions or comments or anything you want removed for discussion or a motion? That's your option.
That, okay.
There might be more, but
there might be more. I would move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce.
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs.
Yes.
Councilmember Laraway.
Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
Mayor Steer.
Yes. Right, that motion carries, and that brings us right to public hearings. Consideration to approve case number 21-16-A, 21-11S. Troy, you may have the floor.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, Troy Behunin, senior planner, 751 West 4th Street here in CUNA, planning and zoning staff. The applications before you tonight request approval to annex approximately 38 acres into the city of CUNA, applying two zones, the R8 high-density zone and the C2 area commercial. Preliminary plat approval is requested in order to subdivide these 38 acres into approximately 210 buildable lot or total lots, 182 single-family lots, 24 common lots, and 4 commercial lots. The overall density is proposed at 3.51 dwelling units per acre. Public Works conditionally supports the Riverton subdivision development with the conditions listed in Section 5 of the engineer's memo, recommending the developer work with the Public Works Department to provide adequate water pressure through necessary looping and or a booster station to serve the project. The commission recommended some changes to the preliminary plat layout and voted on the updated pre-plat. It's within your packet. That is Exhibit 2.34. Staff has reviewed the proposed annexation and preliminary plat for technical compliance with Title 5 and Title 6 of CUNA City Code, Idaho State Statute 676511, and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan. And should the council approve the annexation and the preliminary plat, staff recommends that the applicant be subject to the proposed recommended conditions as outlined in the staff memo. Staff recommends, in addition to those conditions, staff recommends that the council condition 37 total feet of right-of-way be dedicated from center line for both CUNA Road and Locust Grove Road to be in compliance with the CUNA City Street Circulation Map. The applicant is present tonight and is prepared to make a verbal presentation, and I will stand for any questions that you might have.
All right, questions for Troy.
Troy, I wanted to ask about the and or water booster station or the lift station capacity improvements. Is the developer, are they going to be on the hook for this? Have they agreed to cover that, or is that on the city?
For the record, Troy Behunin, that's a great question, Councilmember Biggs. Yes, they will be on the hook for that. That is a recommended condition from the engineer. There is a need for additional water pressure for additional development in this area between here and Falcon Crest, but yes. And I believe that they're amenable to that. Patrick is nodding his head. He can address that during his presentation.
Okay, anything further for Troy?
No, sir, not at the moment. Not for me.
Right. Okay, and we have the applicant. And before you start, so this is a public hearing, and is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign in who wishes to testify? Troy, would you want to bring this back to the gentleman to sign in? Right there. Okay, you may go. Thank you.
Before I begin, my name is Patrick Connor. Address is 701 South Allen Street, Meridian, Idaho. I missed the deadline of last Wednesday to deliver my presentation in electronic format to the city, and so I printed it out here for you all in color, and then there's stacks out there for folks if they want to follow along with the slides. So I'm just going to give these to you all as I present. We can kind of go through it. I also have an electronic copy of it in my pocket through a jump drive. If it's okay with you, Mayor and Clerk, can we show it visually so everyone in the crowd can see a little bit more clearly the presentation?
No, sir. Thanks for your question. However, as I emailed you the city code, that's not allowed.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll just pass them there.
Thank you.
I'll let you guys get those before I start the presentation.
Did you get a copy of this, Chris?
That's right.
Okay, great. You can start. As Troy said, this is the Riverton subdivision application. We presented it twice in front of planning and zoning and made some modifications to it, as I'll get into soon. Your second slide shows that we are trying to annex 38.44 total acres. 33.69 of that we would like for R8 zone, and then 4.76 is C2 commercial zone. The preliminary plat, the amended and permitted plat that we presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission, which was approved by them, is 200 total lots, 172 single-family lots, 24 common lots and 4 commercial lots, totaling 4.76 acres of commercial property. And they have 11.4% of the overall project as qualified open space. On slide 3, you'll see the vicinity map. It's located on the northeast corner of East Keener Road and South Locust Grove. Slide 4, we do border city limits to our western boundary. And as you can see, the property is pretty much equidistant between the two sides of the city limits along East Keener Road. So this kind of will help start filling in the donut hole of the city limits in the southeast part of the city. Slide 5 shows a future land use map. You can see it's colored pink as mixed use. And talking to the city and the Economic Development Department, we all decided that probably best for the property along East Keener Road to be commercial as future development comes. There's a future school site just west of the property, and then Falcon Crest down the way. So there, Keener Road eventually in the future may be a major corridor that commercial uses would be applicable in that area. The current zoning map directly adjacent, it is zone agriculture, but it's in the city limits. And most of the subdivisions around are either R8, R12, or R6 zone. Slide 7 shows the proposed zoning. The north part of the property, the 33 acres, is R8 zone. And then C2 is the southern part of the property that borders East Keener Road, is commercial zone. Slide 8 is a pretty important slide. It shows just details of the preliminary plat. Again, it's 200 total lots, 172 single-family lots, 24 common lots, 4.76 acres of commercial. The gross density is 4.07 units per acre, and the net density is 6.75 units per acre. Slides 9, 10, and 11, or sorry, slides 9 and 10 show some of our home renderings. Over the past couple years, we've revamped all of our homes and all of our architecture to become a little bit more modern, a little bit more applicable to today's buyer. And so we're happy that in Riverton we can provide three different product lines, our 40-foot wide lots, 50-foot wide lots, and 60-foot wide lots. And so it appeals to different buyers looking for different square footage, whether you're trying to move down to a smaller house or whether you're in a starter home or you want to move up to a larger house, you have a larger family that you want to have in your house. Slide 11 shows some of our amenities. So there's three major park areas. The park in the northwest area has the tot lot in the entry area. Then we have a smaller dog park in the center of the property, and then another entry park on the south side of the property. Bordering the north part of the property is the CUNA Canal, and this is part of the CUNA Pathways Trail Network. And so all 1,525 feet along the northern boundary would be part of the CUNA Pathways Network. Slide 12 shows the different sidewalks within the property, whether they're city sidewalks adjacent to the local streets, or there are HOA pathways that go through common areas. Again, that CUNA pathway trail along the north side of the property will eventually be part of a master plan pathway network. Slide 13 shows just that CUNA's pathway map. Between this project and the Greyhawk project, we'll have almost built about a mile of this CUNA pathway network, which is pretty exciting. I know it's going to take years for that thing to be built out, but at least we can contribute through these two projects along that same pathway trail. Again, this contribution to that would be about 1,500 feet. Slide 14 shows some of the potential commercial uses there on Riverton, whether it be a workout facility, healthcare, primary health, a daycare. We have a lot of folks, a lot of daycare people and dentist office, orthodontists, that have come to us recently, seeing if they have any commercial properties in CUNA and the Meridian area as well that they can maybe be a part of. So there's a lot of demand for this kind of neighborhood community commercial, and it's something that we're looking forward to providing in this Riverton project. Slide 15 shows the preliminary phasing plan, and slide 16, before I kind of get into some of the last details, just want to give you all an update on the Hubble Hero House. That is a home in Greyhawk, the community. It's sold, and I think it closes by the end of the month. And the cool thing about this house is that it's selling for over $500,000, and all the proceeds, all the money that our company would make, the cabinet company, the framers, the roofers, everybody's contributing all of their proceeds of this house, all $500,000 worth of it, to seven charities that are shown on this slide 16. So it's a Boys and Girls Club, CUNA Food Bank, Humane Society, Camp Rambo Gold, a number of different charities that will benefit from this sale. So around Christmas time, they'll all be getting a $70,000 check, and that's thankfully the contribution of all of our trade partners. I think we have over 35 trade partners on this particular house that have all given up their proceeds, their time, effort, materials in a very challenging market to go to these charities and at the end of the year. So it's something I really wanted to touch on. And again, that's going to close at the end of this month. The last two slides, or last three slides, slide 17 shows the plan that was initially shown to P&Z and then the updated plan. What they wanted to see was more of a transition on the south side of the property between our adjacent neighbors. Mr. Dwayne Sessions, who's our neighbor to the south, west, we accommodated him and get moving those lots. There were 40-foot lots initially, and we made them 60 feet wide instead. So we lost a significant number of lots there. Again, on the opposite side of the street, opposite side of the project, along the southeast side, we also increased the size of those lots from 40 feet wide to 60 feet wide. Again, that was a request of planning and zoning. It was something that we went back and accommodated for and adjusted our project. So initially, it was 182 single-family lots, and it went down to 172. Council member Biggs asked about some off-site work that we're going to have to do for the water line. Slide 18 shows some of the offsite investments that we're going to have to make that will both serve our property and neighboring properties around us, particularly the school site is just to the west of us. So there's a water line extension that we're going to have to make for water line looping that will help some of the pressure. That's more than a mile, and it'll cost about $1.2 million. Gas line extension, about three-quarters of a mile. It's about $500,000 there for the gas line extension. We're going to have to rebuild 2 to 3 miles of Idaho Power, which is over $1 million of overhead power rework there to bring the appropriate phase power down to our property. And now, again, we'll serve other properties adjacent to us. And then the water pressure upgrades that we mentioned earlier, we think it's going to be around $100,000. Then also on site, we have a pressure irrigation tank and pump house, which is located in the northwest corner of our property, that green space there. That will serve our property and some adjacent properties. I think it's about a half-million-gallon tank that would be part of the pressurized irrigation system. Again, that's a regional pump station. I'm working with Public Works to make sure that's sized appropriately. These major offsite investments were part of the conversation that we had with the school district early on about some of the work that we're going to be doing that's going to eventually serve their property. And there's a letter of support from them in your packet, I believe, knowing that the drag in the water, dragging the gas and the power and the pressure upgrades in this particular pressure zone are going to eventually benefit their high school, middle school property in the future. Lastly, the last slide, there's two land use actions that we're proposing tonight. First for annexation, the zoning for R8 and C2 zone. And again, the preliminary plat that is in accordance with city code. The city's made a lot of regional investments in the CUNA Road region, water and sewer that they pulled all the way down that road many miles. This is, I think, one of the first projects to come that would touch that new infrastructure since that was built. So we're happy that we can be a part of it. And my time is done. Just want to touch on one last thing. We did have conversations with Dwayne Sessions that I mentioned before of some of the concerns that he had in our adjacent, being an adjacent neighbor to them, to him. So in addition to upsizing the width of those lots adjacent to him, we're also offering a 2 to 3 foot berm with the fencing on top of the berm. And any trees that are along that property line, we've agreed to coordinate with him and give him any update on if trees need to be taken out based on drainage or anything like that, but we would give him a heads up and we'd discuss any tree removal of trees that are along our property line with him. So thank you. With that, I stand for any questions.
Okay, questions?
Yes, just clarification. When you're talking about C2 and you have the pictures of these possible renters, is any of this solid or suggestions at this
point? Yes, Councilman. They're just suggestions. We don't have any letters of intent or anything like that. I'm sure if we start marketing the property and start talking to folks, I'm sure there will be a lot of interest. But I was just showing an example of things that would fit into that zone that would serve the neighborhood and the areas.
Okay. Any further questions for the applicant?
Not right now.
Yes. The Rollo Street horizontal curves, is that I didn't see where it was actually agreed that it was going to happen, but it says that it's a requirement, I guess, from ACHD.
Yes.
And you're fully on board with that?
Yes, sir.
Great.
Okay. Oh, go ahead. No, good. All right. Thank you very much. All right, and again, this is a public hearing. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to testify in this matter that wishes to? Okay. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. Let's see, that was the. Joe Larson.
Council members, people of the city community. I'm a member of the community and just wanted to come and participate as part of this. I think as a concerned citizen, as we watch, just want to voice my concern as far as watching, watching what we're doing and making sure that we're taking the appropriate mitigation measures as we build our community and as we're watching where these subdivisions are going. And there's quite a few of us that are starting to become more aware and plan to be active participants. So,
okay. Appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
And actually, that's the only person I have that signed the testify box. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify in this matter? All right. Thank you very much. You want to be up again already?
Sure. Again, for the record, Patrick O'Connor. I just want to thank you for coming. I don't think you're at the neighborhood meetings, but I appreciate you coming. And any mitigation things that you're bringing up, you can talk to me about it as well. There's a lot of things that development has to do to pay their own way, whether it's fees through ACHD or impact fees to the city, and making sure, like all that offsite stuff, we're not asking the city to extend water lines to do water pressure for us. We have to kind of pay our own way to make sure that that happens. So it's a significant cost of development, as it should be, because we're the beneficiaries of it. And again, anytime you want to chat about development in this area, there's a few other applications coming, so it'd be good to be involved as you can be. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, council.
I have a question for Paul.
Okay.
On the tank or whatever, is it going to be a tank or a pond? He said a tank, but.
To be honest with you, it's the first time I heard about the tank.
Okay.
So. Will you turn the mic on?
Everyone wants to hear you.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
The first time I'd heard about the tank, somehow that has slipped past me. Typically, we do want a pond.
Okay. And then it'll be able to be big enough where it's by a main canal, we can use it in the rest of the system? Or
that will be negotiated a little bit. 500,000 gallons is the smallest we'll go, and prefer a million.
Gotcha. Thank you.
I'd like to ask a question for our school district representative, if you don't mind. So the reason I asked this question is I saw the letter of endorsement from the city regarding this subdivision. And I go back to I read my messages and my updates from my school board trustee, Kim Nixon, and I'd like to quote her real quick. Because she said this week, this is I think it was Friday, she wanted to say thank you to members of the City of Meridian's Planning and Zoning Commission for voting to deny a high-density development within our school district boundaries, citing among their concerns that our schools are full. And without voter approval, we cannot build new schools to serve the students. So I'd like to ask the question because the letter of endorsement was signed on August the 4th. To me, this doesn't seem like it's full by getting this letter. This is I'm the new guy, so I've reviewed five or six different packages now where the school has endorsed each one. So I wanted to ask this question. If we're full and we're saying that in that regard about the turn down by Meridian P&Z, what makes this one okay?
Will you turn the mic on? Thank you.
For the record, Danielle Horace, 711 East Porter, CUNA School District Director of Strategy and Partnerships. I adore that question, Mr. Council Member, because it brings open the big picture of what are we doing here, who pays for growth, and how are we taking care of our kids. It's complicated. How's that for the shortest answer? The big picture here is that some developments come to the table and work with us to mitigate the cost of growth. The one that you just heard absolutely did. the way that they're going to support the growth of our school by their subdivision will allow us to serve students into the future. So when I come up here, I always tell the same story, that in 10 years we are heading for crisis. And we're on track right now to have almost 3,000 children without a school, a desk, a teacher, or a classroom. They're going to pull up to nothing if we don't do something different. So that's why I come, and that's honestly why there's a lot of folks here tonight, because sometimes when we talk with developers, they partner. They say, what can we do so that really CUNA, 40% of our population are kids. Nationally, no one believes that. They actually have to rub their eyes and look at that data twice because it seems so unreal, but it's true. That's CUNA. We are a kid-friendly district, but we have to be smart about making those investments if 40% of our population doesn't have a voice in these meetings. So I will be that voice, and my answer to you is Kim Nixon is right. When we do not have partnership from development to be able to build the infrastructure to support our kids, we love it when City Council says no. And City of Meridian did.
So I'll take this a step further then. I guess I can't know exactly what the arrangement was between the school and the school district and
in Riverton. Public.
And so my first thought is that the school district is going to be asking for a bond slash levy here soon, which is going to be on the backs of the CUNA taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Is whatever this arrangement is this enough to offset that? Because exactly like you said, 10 years down the road.
A little bit.
Because what if the bond and levy fail, which there's probably a good chance it could. It has before. and I'm very afraid of that. I'm a parent too.
Yeah.
So I'm very concerned about that.
Yeah, Danielle Horace, 711 Porter Street. Councilmember Biggs, I can't even imagine what that would do to our kids. If we go to our community and say, here's what we need, and they say no. What we believe at CUNA School District, we feel very confident that if we tell the story of here's what we're doing to mitigate the impact of growth to where we're not making all of the cost on your shoulders, we think that's a better story than, hey, just put up with it. This is what it's going to cost. So that's why we're here. That's why we're asking for partnership from developers voluntarily to be able to say to our moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas, we did our best.
Well, and that's where, I guess, if you follow me, that's where my biggest heartache is with this, is not that they aren't doing their diligence, but I'm afraid that whatever has been arranged might be dependent on a bond.
It absolutely is.
And exactly. And it's hard for me to support that, potentially, if I know it's going to go to bond, it might need 67%.
Yeah.
For approval?
Supermajority.
And because bonds are getting tougher, especially in the economy we're in now and the growth that we're, even with buying houses and everything else has come to a screeching halt pretty much across the country. So I needed to ask that question. I appreciate your answer.
It's a smart question, and Councilmember Biggs, we don't have a backup plan if it fails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
You have to have something to say.
Not until we close.
Well, and then, I know that you were curious about what was offered with the school, and the applicant covered part of that with infrastructure going to the school property, but also listed in the minutes from the Planning and Zoning Commission that was in your packet, they're also assisting in the building of a school.
On the property that's to the west.
Right, so.
Are we questioned out?
No? Yeah, I actually have a question, Paul. Where does this feed into? What sewer system will that one, this feed into?
Orchard lift station.
Chris, Chris, Paul really does try to keep up with procedure, but, you know.
I thought so. We put Nancy next to him.
Yeah, that's why HR is next to
him. Okay. Are we out of questions so we can close it?
Yes.
One time and one time only?
I'm good.
Okay. I would move we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the evidence presentation and move to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? And that motion carries.
Well, I'll start, I guess. Everyone's looking at me, so... you know, it's a lot of houses way far out. And Councilmember Biggs talked about how things are coming to a screeching halt, but if you look around, there still seems to be a lot of developers dredging forward with, you know, trying to make product available. I think the markets, and I have no knowledge of this, Mr. Bruce might be better at that, but how many houses are truly selling or not. But I mean, in the line of work I do, a lot of product is still moving, and a lot of infrastructure and subdivisions like this seem to still be popping up. It seems to be laid out good. They made good rapport with the neighbors on changing stuff, and I didn't see too much negative like we've seen before about their planning and willingness to work with their neighbors. Their chunk of infrastructure stuff, I mean, that is what it is with any development, so that's, I guess, no big hurrah, but I don't know. It looks decently laid out for the piece of property that it is, so I'm not majorly against it, I guess.
And there is a definite slowdown on residential construction. The report from Planning and Zoning last week was one residential permit and two commercial.
Yeah.
So we actually got more commercial than residential for once. But and I think last month was 12
total
residential building permits. So we're way down from where we were. So and you know, market's going to depend on how that keeps happening. But.
Mm-hmm. Next.
I don't have it next. I mean, I'm not a real proponent of R8. I'm not. But sitting up here and nobody is in opposition of it, I have to let it roll off my back. But I like the fact that this subdivision is working with the school district. my heart goes out to the school district. I'll vote for you, whatever you want to do, because I know we have some issues that we need to address. It has been to do with this subdivision, other than nobody is in opposition of it. I like the storefront possibilities, the road widening that's going to be required, the sewage. I don't have anything against this subdivision. So that's my two cents.
Okay.
I look at it as, I think we have just under or just over 4,000 houses that we've already slated to approve, right? Now, this may not be a big neighborhood in the whole scheme of things, but, you know, my thought is I've discussed mitigation fees for the school district, something to help either relieve stress or help them in the future, because you can't count on a bond passing. How many times did the fire district run that before it passed?
Several.
I think we carry part of this burden, too, if we continue to approve these things, especially R8. And I get what you're saying about not having anyone in opposition, but I think maybe I talk to a lot of the community, right, and we see a lot of growth. And So from my point of view, until we figure out a way to help mitigate some of the issues that the schools are dealing with, even though this subdivision meets our comprehensive plan and they've done a lot, I'll be voting no on this one.
Okay.
My biggest issue is that there is no backup plan if a bond were to fail. And I don't have confidence that the bond will pass. And I totally appreciate the fact that there is no opposition to this, but the schools do have a caveat. There is an asterisk if the bond passes. So it's going to be a hard one for me to support in that regard.
This is difficult because forever it was, well, we thought about the schools, and I get that. I mean, I have young kids. You have older kids. Mr. Bruce does as well. Lairway's without at this point, lucky dog. But we always tried to do what was best for the school district. Now they've started this partnership thing that they've been hitting developers with. Some have paid into it and, you know, are willing to work, and others have just flat out said no and came before us regardless. Here we have a subdivision that has paid a substantial amount, because I read the notes in that the mayor spoke of, and the school district is giving it the green light, but we're up here saying, well, but long term it might not be good enough. So I don't see how we're doing our civic duties or whatever by saying no when they have a working partnership. I mean, I understand it's not long term. I fully get that, and I fully understand how bonds and levies fail a lot. Been around it a ton of times. But I don't see how we can – I guess I understand you guys are looking more long term, but they're saying as of right now it's thumbs up, so I don't see why we're saying no.
If there were a contingency plan, if there were something that we're buying a school or –
But we could look 5 years down the road and what ifs happen. What if 06 happens again? Well, there is some forward thinking for that, but right now, today, on paper, the schools are saying we can support this. We're saying no.
Yeah. If the bond passes.
4,000 houses have already been approved, which we've taken that kind of out of our area to even be able to have any yes or no say, right? Once it's annexed, we've already been through that this year. You know, then it's just checking boxes. 4,000 houses. And if we continue to just say, well, they're good, we'll just keep them coming, at some point, we're responsible for this.
Well, I guess...
That's just me.
So curious if that's the case, because the school district spends considerable time negotiating and working with developers, are we saying that we're not going to approve anything regardless, so they don't need to negotiate anymore, or are we basing it on if we do come up with a plan for mitigation fees, that's still not going to relieve the plan B if a bond doesn't pass? I don't know. I guess I don't know the direction that you would like to go here, because basically they have negotiated mitigation fees with this developer, and that's what we're looking into. Hopefully tying to building permits for ones that have already been approved. I guess what I'm asking for is what direction do we tell our folks in the school district? Or are we just cutting it off until we run a bond? What is our plan B? And I'm not putting down what you're saying. I'm trying to get to where we're at with things. And
my only thing is if the bond fails, if it's dependent on a bond that's going to be on the back of the CUNA taxpayers, that would be hard for me to support. If that's the only means because the, whatever they're going to have is still going to be dependent on the bond, and that's tough. That's really tough because of our CUNA's record with bonds. I mean, the fire levy, it took for, you know, how many times until it just passed.
And that's reasonable, but there is no reason there's not a plan B is that's their only source of funding. So until they get enough support from developers to help build a building, I mean, obviously that's the end goal. They got to build a building. Hopefully the tax increment is enough to support the hiring of teachers and principals and all the other things that have to go with that beyond just building a building. And I appreciate the discussion because I understand where you're coming from, and I guess we just need to know if the school district needs to continue to negotiate or if planning and zoning folks need to continue to do their job, or are we just going to cut off until we look at a bond?
Continue. I go back to the comment about Meridian. We are full. They're saying we are full. It wasn't we are, you know, there. It was not a percentage. I mean, I'd like to know what is the building safety code, fire code capacity at this point. Are we there? I doubt it.
I don't know those things.
I imagine it's close.
I think they've shown us their statistics on what schools are what at capacity in that, and their high school is full. Swan Falls does kind of take some of that load occasionally because they run kids back and forth. But
against that ceiling, it's hard to say, okay, well, we really hope this bond passes.
And my thought, too, is, like, I understand, I respect people's private property rights, but at what point are we going to continue to ask our community to fund new growth, sure. Right, with, I mean, the fire department, the schools with, I think, $110 million is what they're looking at. And I get what you're saying. Are we just going to say no? But on the other hand, are we just going to say yes until, and not even look at it?
And that's fair. That's a fair question. It goes both ways.
I mean, I don't get me wrong. I respect people's, you know, right to do what they want to with their property, but we're continuing to put that on our community. And if it doesn't, that's just how I feel.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is I'm afraid we're going to just come to a stalemate, because even if we do get to where we can do the mitigation fees, which it sounds like that's basically kind of what was negotiated here, was to help with the school district. I mean, we know that mitigation fees are slow in coming, and it's going to take a while for them to get enough to build a school, but where does that put us? I mean, if the school district says we're good with the negotiations, I think that we need to trust in the school district and their reasoning behind that. I don't think that if they were at the point that there's just no way they can do anything else, that they would come to us and say they worked with us, were satisfied with what they came up with, and we can support it. I mean, So I think the school district has spoken, and I appreciate that we're listening to the school district, and I think we need to listen to the school district, because negotiations were held. There was a meeting, a reason that they spent that time doing the negotiations. Mm-hmm. And either way, I'm fine. I just think it's important that we understand our direction, because it kind of just sounds like we're going to just say no more. And there's nothing to do to not say no more until a bond passes or whatever.
my thing is the annexation part, right? Because once we annex it, it's just checking the box. Did they meet the development agreement? Does the plat work? You know, we went through all this all year long. So that's where I get to the point to where at annexation, we're taking ourselves out of the equation. Once it's annexed, we're done, right? We can still, at least from all of our conversations all year long.
But that's if we just annex a piece of land and then they come later with a plan. This one kind of has a plan. and the school district negotiated that. So I get what you're saying. If we're just going to annex bare land and there's no plan with it, then your hands are a little more tied on what you can do. But
they have the plan, right? And and the school districts are full, the bonds fail. Do we not have any? We're just going to keep approving land, keep approving projects? Until when? Until they're hanging out the windows? Until we're driving them to school?
But they're right now, they're saying this is okay. So I get long term too, but they're saying green light, go.
Yeah, but how many times have they come here and said and made an okay? I mean, this year, just in general, right, we've had the school district say it's 2.2 kids, 0.5 kids. Do we believe that at some point the school district's just saying, hey, we're trying to get something, so let's send a letter that we accept this, which is better than nothing? You know, what does this actually do with easing the capacity that we have? Does it do anything?
One thing about this I'm looking at is if the school district wants to negotiate with the developers, good for them. Right? That's none of my business. But I think what starts to happen to me is the more agreements are generated from developers as we move forward through the school district, that means our bond request is going to be lower because of the participation from developers that are buying into the school district. We're not going to need the $110 million. Maybe that's a hypothetical number. I don't know. Maybe we'll only need $89 million now because of the participation of developers that are buying into the school district. And this one right here, most of the subdivisions that come in don't supply a commercial storefront property that generates more tax for us. So I don't have a problem with this. I'm not a foreseer in the crystal ball. I don't know what the bond's going to do. I don't want to see the town stop thriving and be growing based on one entity of our world, and that's the school district. I have to have faith that the town will rally around the school district and understand the problem that we've been looking at for the last 9 years. To step up and help the school district get through this, because it's not a school district issue, it's a community issue. I respect what you're saying, I understand it. I'm 51% on this side going, we gotta do something. And if we can encourage the development agreements with the school, I'm not saying I'm gonna say yes, they have to do it, but if they're going to cooperate with the school, and they're going to buy into this, I have to hope that our bond's going to be a lot less. And that's all I can look at. I'm done.
I think with the right education, the school board can get a bond to pass. The fire department took a different route this time. They got it done handily. Second thing I want to say, a while back, and I'm not calling the school board or the administration there or like our representative, anyone directly out by any means on this. But we had a meeting with them a great time ago. And they presented all these numbers about, well, this school's overcrowded and this and that. And they gave us all these numbers. And I don't have those with me in front of me, whatever. But then later on, a month or two after that, I was online looking for something else. And I came across their numbers. And 2/3 of what they had said for this school's overcrowded, that, oh, they had all sorts of capacity at. And it was a matter of shifting kids around, and they weren't actually overcrowded at any school that way, but they just didn't move kids or whatever. But the next time we had somewhat of a meeting with them, and I brought that up, guess what disappeared from online? All their numbers about how many kids were actually at a school and whatever. Kind of weird. Like, it's almost like, I wasn't trying to call them out, but I said, hey, you said you were overcrowded here, here, and here. why don't we shift some kids or rearrange some boundary lines where these kids move schools or whatever? And all that information disappeared. So where are they really at? Do we have hard numbers from the schools that say exactly how many kids are enrolled at each school, what their forecast is for kids coming up, new growth, building permits issued? I mean, here we're just talking about 12 building permits all month. So they might build this subdivision. Who's going to build in it? Apparently not very many if they're 12 citywide and for the whole month. I mean, in time, the recession changes, whatever. Boom, growth takes off again. Okay, here we are again. But what are the real numbers here? I'm going with what we have today, and today the school's saying we can support this. We're behind it. They're behind us. Everyone's in the same sandbox playing with the same toys. Kumbaya, whatever.
Well, I think that with their capital planning group and the information that was brought forward there, they did a great job in looking at what could happen to shift kids around in schools. And I think they've got pretty solid numbers now on what is what they have. I mean, it's a crystal ball to see what you're going to get. But,
sure.
You know, I don't know a lot of people that have 1.3 kids. But, you know, it's I think that they've spent a lot of time and effort. The Capital Planning Group did a great job. I think they put together a lot of really good information. I think they've really got a handle on it now, whereas before there was still some guessing games and trying to figure out exactly where they were at. And I think they've got that gotten down now. They did a great job with the Capital Planning Group, and those folks spent a lot of time there helping with the school district and coming up with a good plan. So, again, it will rely on a bond, but with projects like this where they can bring in some other money, then that helps, like you said, reduce those bond costs. So, so I think they are a lot better shape now with what they know as far as numbers. And so that's, again, why I, when the school district says that we can support this based on people that are the developer or the applicant in this case, working with the school district, and they're offering them something, and the school district apparently thinks that that's good enough for supporting approval of the project. So I put a lot of trust in the school district and on what they say. And
I just take what, you know, what the trustees were saying, you know, for the city of Meridian. Maybe they didn't come to the table with anything for the school district. But the message that I got, loud and clear, says that we're full. And so it's just hard for me to not see. And listening to the voters in CUNA that I talked to anyway, it seems like it's kind of lukewarm on any kind of a bond. The last bond we had was about 2015 or 2016, and it failed. And then when they had to come back, and there was a special provision that they did it again a couple months later, and it passed, squeaked by.
By 12 votes, as I recall.
Yeah. And so that's just what's on my mind.
And again, I think that, and I'm not speaking for the school district by any means, but I believe that bond failing initially, like the last fire bond, was poor education on
no doubt.
On their part on how the money needed to be spent and where and why and exactly to the deal. I mean, straight up, the one at the fire department was, we need this much for what? Well, a little bit here, a little bit there. People don't want to hear that. They want to know exactly to the penny where every ounce of that's being spent. And this time it was very transparent on that and exactly what we needed for labor and a building and yada, yada, yada.
Well, I hope they take the same approach, because asking for $100 to $110 million isn't a drop in the bucket, you know, especially in this, you know, economy and all that good stuff.
So. Right.
I think it says assisting, right, to help build the school. Is that what you had in there?
Mm-hmm.
And then that said, if we don't do anything where there's been negotiations with the fire district. That $110 million still has to happen.
Yes.
But this way, at least, it's... they're helping with it. Mm-hmm. So, and again, I'm putting the trust in the school district, and I think that no one knows better than them on what their ability is to serve and not to serve. I don't think that I should be an expert on.
Oh, I'm by far not.
What they're doing, I don't look at their numbers. They run their budget. They do their that's their job, and that's what they do. So. I do get what you're saying, though, that they give kudos for stopping in development.
Yeah, and I don't know how that even compares to this situation at all. Not knowing that, it's hard to say. But it's weird when they go out and, hey, thank you, Ryan, for stopping something because we're full.
And
I'm a simple guy.
All of the trustees had that same message.
Right, I'm sure it's...
Yeah, they were all the same.
I'm done talking.
You heading home?
No.
Well, I appreciate the discussion. I think this is good. This is healthy. This is how we need to know where we need to get there.
And I really appreciate all the work that they put into this. This is... other circumstances.
Everyone said their piece.
Maybe the trustees will say thank you, CUNA City, for approving something with someone that negotiated with us.
That would be nice.
They're going to help assist, and the school's property is right next to it.
What's that?
They are going to help assist. I think the problem is right. Anything that doesn't help build a school, right, is going to be tough because you can give land all day long. It does until unless they've got walls, there's nothing, right. You can give, hopefully not lawnmowers, but.
And this is middle school property.
No, this is school district property.
Right. Oh, yeah, but it was meant to be.
I think originally it was slated for the high school.
High school.
Because of infrastructure problems, they ended up moving it out towards Columbia.
Yeah, I thought it was a little further west. Okay.
They were talking about the high school being there, but the problem was there were no services out by that property. They're at least closer now. And also there was a requirement from ITD to do the improvements at the curve of Highway 69 and CUNA Road so that would be a safer route to get to the school. And so that made that piece of property not viable at the time. So with what's going on here, that helps to do that. There's and we are looking at some other ways to take care of the intersection problem at Highway 69 and CUNA Road. Hopefully we can get that all done. Even where they built the Swan Falls High School, the school district had to pay for a stoplight there. We can get development to pay for those things so the school district doesn't have to. That's our goal. That's what we're working towards. All of those things help the school district so that their bonds don't have to be as expensive.
And I do have one question. This number of $110 million, I don't want to start a rumor. Is that a real number? Or is it?
Yeah, it's a real number.
It's on the, yeah, it was on the.
It was open meeting last.
I didn't want to start a rumor.
100 to 110 million.
Yeah, Plan B is what they went with.
Well, now it's 50 million, right? Just kidding.
I'm done. You're okay with R8, John?
I'm sorry?
R8. You good with that there? Yeah. On the corner?
Okay, if we're done discussing. Make sure my numbers are right here. Okay. I would move we approve case number 2116A and 2111S with the conditions listed in the packet.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second for approval. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Nay.
Okay, Chris, would you do a roll call on that, please?
Thank you, sir. Councilmember Bruce.
No.
Councilmember Biggs.
Yes.
Councilmember Larraway.
Four. Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. That motion carries. Number B, case numbers 2202AN and 2201ZC and 2202DA for the Lamp District. Lamp. Jessica Reed.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. For the record, Associate Planner Jessica Reed, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA. The applicant requests approval to annex four parcels located near the northeast corner of East Deer Flat and North Meridian Road, totaling approximately 24.65 acres, into CUNA city limits with the C2 area commercial zone. The applicant also requests to rezone two parcels already within CUNA city limits, totaling approximately 10.18 acres, from C1 neighborhood commercial to a C2 area commercial zone. Staff notes there is no development currently associated with this case, and a development agreement accompanies the application stating development cannot occur until sewer connections are available, and any future development will be designed in substantial conformance with the preliminary concept plan found in Exhibit 2.18. CUNA's Comprehensive Plan Future Land Use Map, or FLUM, is intended to serve as a guide and indicates our land uses, generally speaking. Currently, the FLUM designates the two parcels on the immediate corner of Deer Flat and Meridian as commercial, while the remaining four parcels are designated as mixed use. Based upon the preliminary development concept mentioned, staff finds this request to be in compliance with that FLUM. Various agencies have provided comment regarding development of the subject site, which will need to be taken into consideration when a development application comes forward. However, staff again reminds this body the current request is for the annexation and rezone only. Upon review, staff finds the annexation request to be in compliance with Idaho Statute 50-222. The rezone is in compliance with Idaho Statute 67-65, and both requests are in compliance with CUNA City Code Title V and the goals and policies set in the comprehensive plan. Staff would recommend approval of the case, with the applicant being subject to the conditions of approval listed in the staff report, as well as any additional conditions this decision-making body would wish to impose. And with that, I will answer any questions you have.
Okay, questions for Jessica Reed?
None right now.
Okay.
It's nice to see you, Ms. Jessica.
Nice to see you, Council Members.
And we have the applicant.
Thank you, Mayor and Council Members. For the record, Penelope Constantakis with Riley Planning Services, Post Office Box 405, Boise, Idaho 83701. The applicant and developer is also the property owner, and that translates into an actual commitment to the best the site can be for the City of CUNA. The applications before you this evening are for an annexation of four parcels to complete a site consolidation that started previously at this corner and a uniform C2 zone across the entire six parcels. This is the beginning of a placemaking activity for this unique opportunity and important corner on Highway 69. Ongoing discussions are taking place with major national retail and service providers to locate at this site. These applications allow the developer to complete the first essential step in site development, and once commitments are formalized, The remainder of the site will be refined in incremental steps. With a C2 zone across the entire site, no residential development can occur without adjustments to the zoning designations on the site. It is too early in the process to get into too much detail. These details will come as additional applications and other processes take place in the city of CUNA. Keeping the site somewhat a blank slate provides the applicant with the most flexibility at the front end of the development process. While the actual site layout will evolve through the process in order to meet the specific needs of these retail anchors, the philosophy and vision of the site conceptual layout will remain. The goal is to connect CUNA with high-quality shopping and services, and I would emphasize potentially expand housing options for CUNA. The final details and site geometry will evolve and lead to future refinements, but the anticipated elements are commercial sites for major national goods and services retailers. The centerpiece of the development will be the Lamp District area for neighborhood activity, a place to meet friends, go on a date, and find everyday services and retail that marry CUNA with its shopping needs close to home. Retail locations for goods and services, haircuts, brunch, lunch and dinner, pet grooming, insurance, and other professional services. Pedestrian activity with connectivity to the pathway system. Pedestrian access throughout the site and to the east is planned so that neighbors can wander over on Saturday morning for coffee and pastry or haircut. Music, outside dining, Saturday market, these are all on the table at this point. The aesthetic is yet to be finalized, but conceptual elevations were submitted in the application packet for the commercial uses. A variety of housing types may be possible, with condos above the Lamp District retail area and over 55 townhouse section and walk-up apartments. Again, I would emphasize that in order to have any residential on this site, rezone applications would be required. Multiple employment opportunities for CUNA residents. Keeping CUNA dollars in CUNA by providing goods and services that elevate, complement, and supplement what is already available at this important intersection close to home. Utilize the functional road classification system as intended and keep trips on roads designed for that purpose. The applicant is aware of the sewer and water master plans for CUNA and understands cooperation with other developers in the area and the city of CUNA will be needed. Discussions are expected as the project moves forward. The applicant and project team have had initial outreach conversations with the Boise Board of Control and the CUNA School District to gain a better understanding of their needs. These two will be continuing conversations as the project moves forward. As I stated previously, with the requested C2 zone, at this time, residential development cannot occur on the site. An initial TIS was done when the first two parcels were annexed and zoned. Preliminary discussions with the traffic engineer have taken place. With the guidance of ACHD and ITD, all the needed improvements will be identified and the applicant will work cooperatively with transportation agencies. The site is included in the CUNA Master Pathway Plan and the developer will work with the city on amenities and a pathway. What is most important is that the site elements are in line with the City of CUNA's vision, that the proposed annexation and uniform zoning designation across the site will allow the developer to begin the process on making a well-designed place that reflects the character of CUNA, keeping CUNA dollars in CUNA, and that the end result is a truly desirable, distinctive, and well-designed place. The project team has reviewed the staff report and public works memo. There are no objections to the conditions of approval. The DA has also been reviewed and city infrastructure elements have been noted for future reference. We do expect that there probably will need to be some development agreement modifications in the future as the project moves forward. We look forward to working with the City of CUNA. I've enjoyed working with Jessica. We respectfully request approval this evening for the proposed annexation and zoning designation. With that, I'd like to preserve my rebuttal time, and I would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay, questions?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Under your, I've got it on page 53, it's a diagram of your property. You have several buildings that you have under mixed use.
I'm going to go get my copy of that if I could, please.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, would you repeat that again? You say page 56?
You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 buildings that you have under mixed use.
Uh-huh.
And they're not identified as commercial.
Page 53.
Is it page 53?
Yeah,
53. On R. I don't know what she had.
Oh, that one. Okay, I've got it right here. Thank you. I'm looking at it. You know, this was intended to provide some insight into the potential of the site. It's not a confirmed layout. When you ask about mixed use, could you maybe elaborate a little bit more on what you think that would be?
Well, you have a pretty good abundance of commercial.
Yes, sir.
And then right behind it, you have identified apartment complexes and you have identified paired homes. So why wouldn't we identify what mixed use is?
The blue, I think the blue squares, there's a key on the right-hand side of this layout that shows mixed use. So those are the more of the boutique, professional haircut, brunch, coffee shop type uses.
Storefront.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's what I needed.
Okay. Anything further
for the applicant?
It's kind of hard for me to. So, the Danskin lift station, I was concerned about, but there's no developer yet. That's going to be a condition of development, I would imagine, that the Danskin lift station has to have improvements made or it can't support water and sewer.
Mayor, Councilman, that is correct. The last time I was here for the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, Bonnie Layton was here, and she's working on a project that is on the west side of Meridian Road and north of this project. So we've been networking and reaching out to the other developers in the area, and we understand that there's upgrades to systems and other things that will be required. We understand that and look forward to working through the process.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, it shows you're going to build, you know, around and build. You're going to pipe the canal, I guess, is what I'm getting at, that goes through there.
Mr. Mayor, Councilman, I think that that's still an open question. In my experience with the Boise Board of Control, the entry point and the exit point have to remain the same, and you can't easily change distance or elevation change with canals like that because of the hydrology. Mm-hmm. So we met with Tom at the Board of Control and visited with him to get some front-end information. These are all things we understand we'll have to work through. So it may be tiled, it may not be. That would show up with a preliminary plat application.
Okay.
Okay, anything further for the applicant?
No,
all right.
Thank you
very much. All right, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone who wishes to testify in this matter didn't get a chance to sign in? All right. Danielle Horace.
For the record, Danielle Horace, 711 East Porter, CUNA School District. Mr. Mayor, council members, and thank you for this opportunity to weigh in on this dialogue. CUNA School District has no problems with the commercial plans as outlined by the LAMP district. I do want to speak to the residential. So I will share with you a letter sent to the applicant, and it is as follows. CUNA School District has reviewed the application and provides the comments for your consideration. CUNA School District has experienced unprecedented student growth, and based on approved plats, this growth seems to just continue. Very much like the conversation we were having before. I appreciated the thoughtful dialogue about what do we do now versus what's our big picture plan. And sometimes those get complicated. And Councilmember McPherson, I'm happy to say that I have some data specific to this area. Currently, in the impacted zone of Silver Trail Elementary, there are currently 2,334 CUNA City-approved platted lots to be built. Based on our district and community student generation rate, we are anticipating 1,517 additional students in this elementary zone alone. That's the crisis we were talking about. That's the 10-year plan where a lot of it is in this zone. So our current enrollment at Silver Trail is 579 students. Our current capacity right now is 650, so we're real close. The projected enrollment based on the approved plats is 2,056. That's where we get scared. As the data illustrates, the zone impacted by the LAMP district will already be at capacity. This development of about 260 units adds more students to our district, which is already planned to be over capacity. Unfortunately, I'm here to testify in opposition and let you know that CUNA School District cannot serve the students anticipated because the approved plats are beyond our capacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. Ms. Horace.
Ludette.
For the record, Ludette Leon. I'm a resident of Lugarno Terra. And I'm here to support the CUNA School District. I was invited to become a member of the school CUNA School District Growth Committee. And one of the things that we did, the school principal of Swan Falls High School gave us a tour of the high school, and if anyone ever has the opportunity to look at or to go to visit that school, you would be so impressed. But the one thing that I was impressed about was in 2016, the CUNA School District made a study of what the curriculum or what is more relatable or important at that time, and that they found out that there will be jobs needed in the medical field, in the construction field, automotive field, and so on. And what the CUNA School District did is they responded to this change. And so if you get a chance to visit Swan Falls High School, they do have an automotive lab, and some of the national companies have actually donated cars and engines and different automotive parts. And the high school students learn how to put this together and how to repair the cars. They have a few students who are students and also working already with national companies. They have a laboratory where they actually are taught, or high school students are taught, on how to build homes. There is also a laboratory where high school students are trained as dental hygienists, also as ENT workers and sports medicine or something that will lead them to sports medicine careers. The point being, in 2016, CUNA School District adopted a motto of future ready. And here we are, majority of the people from my development who are here have grown children. They're out of the state, but we as citizens are concerned for the future of the students of CUNA. In listening to the discussion before
your time's up, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you can just wrap up.
Okay. So listening to the discussion a while ago about whether the bond will fail or not, perhaps you can educate us on how we can make the bond be successful, or how can we make the bond pass, and we're willing to help to make this bond pass. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Did anybody have any questions?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you so much. Rebecca.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Rebecca Getson. I'm a resident of Lugano Terra subdivision. And it's been very enlightening hearing the discussion for the last subdivision. And the LAMP district, I don't have any problem with the commercial part of it. I'm here on behalf of the school district also. I don't have any children in CUNA, but education is very fundamental to the success of our city and our children. And if the rezone gets changed from C2 to residential, that's my concern. If the school district is already going to be to full capacity, I would appreciate the consideration of the council to think about that and the impact it has on the school district. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And that was all I had signed up to testify. Was there anybody else who wishes to that didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay.
Would you like my assistant, sir?
She can just. I'll put in the information if okay. Go ahead. And you can just go to the podium, and then are you in favor, neutral, or opposition?
Opposition.
Okay, and if you would slowly state your name and address.
My name is Crystal Robles, R-O-B-L-E-S. My address is 12733 South 5 Mile Road in CUNA.
Okay, thank you. You may go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to come today because I am looking more closely at how the city is growing, because I do have 5 kids and 3 of them currently do go to the CUNA School District. My youngest in elementary and my oldest in high school. And I'm concerned with not only the capacity of the schools, but the transportation. I know that we are in need of a new transportation, maybe hub. It does take my kids about 45 minutes to get home and to school, which is quite a long time for kids to be on a bus. With additional stops being made and added, because there is only one center and it's growing farther and farther out, and I am on the rural end of it, so stops adding along the way does make it longer. So if there was a way to have that in consideration, that the school does need that in order to provide transportation, that would be great. Sometimes it does take my kids an hour because of traffic, depending on what's going on with trains and such. So, you know, it's not easy, and especially when they're trying to run home after they get off the bus to try to use the restroom, you know, that's not fun for them. So just something to consider. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay.
Hello. My name is Sarah Lett.
Say it again.
Sarah Lett, S-A-R-A-H, last name of Lett, L-E-T-T. Address is 1777 North Ride Avenue in CUNA.
And CUNA, right?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So I live directly behind the proposed development. I'm definitely hearing all of the information about the schooling issues, so I'm definitely agreeing to all of that. I'm also a real estate agent, so I can't help but be super concerned about future resale values for everybody's properties that are backing up to the development coming. I previously had projected two-story townhomes coming in directly behind me, so I got mentally prepared for that. And now, if this is, you know, residential is denied, and commercials going in, and God forbid we have a Cafe Rio behind us again with a massive spotlight and trash cans and everything behind us and all the debauchery that goes on behind alleyway streets, that's going to definitely significantly devalue all of our properties and our way of life. So I guess I just have a basic question maybe to the development team. If residential is denied, that the developer that comes along has a really, really solid understanding plan of what they plan on putting in our backyards, just for our quality of life and noise and smell and everything else. So hopefully that's something that can be taken into account for.
Okay. All right. Questions for?
No, all right. No, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your testimony. Anyone else? Okay, yeah.
My name's Darcy Keenan, K-E-E-N-A-N. My address is 1244 North Cambrick Drive. And
Bless you.
Thank you for having us today. I am in support of the school district. I've worked with the school district. I actually, my backyard butts up to the girls' softball field. And anytime I've ever approached them about anything going on, they have fixed it. They have accommodated us, and they've worked with us as a subdivision and personally with my home. I knew going in that the school was there, and I am totally fine with that, i.e. even the dairy. And so I support anything that they have going on. I work closely with them. I don't have a child in school anymore. He graduated in 2016, and I still support anything that they have going on and feel that it has been very impactful and hard on all of these subdivisions coming in and hearing the concerns. I hear lots of the concerns, even to this day, of parents and of all the subdivisions going in, and how are we going to, you know, I have parents that are teachers, and it's impactful to the teachers, not just the students. It's very stressful. So I'm in support of the school district, especially with this lamppost.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Get up again. My name is Joel Larson. Do you need my address again? Or
Are you going in favor? Or
I'm opposed to the residential.
Okay.
So
Joel Larson, right?
Correct.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah, so hearing what the school district just said, I actually have a kid that's at Silver Trail. That scares me. We've actually had three other kids come through there. I have five kids total. One just graduated from the CUNY school district, and we've at one time all four of them, the other four have come through Silver Trail, and it's a great school, but it's definitely getting pretty packed. My wife volunteers there, and she's witnessed pretty firsthand what's going on in that school as far as how full it's getting. And this is when I got up early and I talked about mitigation. This is what I'm talking about. We need to do something to mitigate this. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Anyone else? No. In the back?
Yes.
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll go. I wasn't going to get up and Penelope.
Are you in favor or opposition?
I'm a neutral guy.
You're a neutral guy.
But I'm on the list.
I didn't offer that option, but go ahead.
Okay. I'm on the list.
Let me get there.
Go ahead.
Okay, what was your name?
Douglas Clegg. I'm on the list there. I signed in.
Douglas, you chose to testify. You chose not to testify, but now you are.
I changed my mind. Is that okay?
Gotcha.
All right. My name is Douglas Clegg. I live at 715 West Blue Spruce Road, Alpine, Utah, 84004, and I am the developer. And Penelope is probably going to spank me for getting up here, but I'm so excited about this project and so excited about all the comments that I've heard and the concerns. I am a senior housing developer and work very actively and have my whole career in this valley under the name of Spring Creek to deliver housing for seniors. We have zero interest in apartments. This was put on based in this project solely because of one of the testimonies you just heard about the transitional element of retail to single family. You'll note on the east side of our property that it is townhomes. That is 55 and older. If you guys don't want apartments, we're in. And I'll just do more senior housing, which has zero impact on the school district, is low traffic, and actually, yeah, they're pretty quiet. I mean, they like jazz, but they're not into hard rock. So my neighbors are going to have a love affair with this group of people over there. So I want to get that on the table and make sure that you guys understand that we did our research. This was created over 2 years ago, this thing that you have in your packet right now. By the time we even get to question about residential, if we bring in a Lowe's or a Walmart, 2 years minimum before they start construction, and I'm probably 18 to 24 months after that before we do any residential construction. So these are designated zones. If you ain't got a bomb by then, we got a problem. We got a bigger problem than what we're talking about right now. You're talking 3 to 5 years down the road. So I just want to put some context on this. So you guys know how committed we are to this. You need this project. You need retail. You need taxes from this commercial district to support everything that's going on here. You need jobs. So people stop driving and creating traffic to the north. This is a fundamental element of this area of your community, and we're just hoping you guys stay with it. I love everything about the school district. We're huge supporters. We got a call on Monday, an invitation to support regarding the residential element of this. And I says, I don't even know how to put a number on this. How do I make a commitment at this juncture when I don't even know if we're going to do it? We're in a C2 zone. You can't build apartments in a C2. So we got a lot of work to do to get down that road. And I hope you guys, if you put this into context, it makes sense. So anyway, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? Oh,
do I get my rebuttal?
Yes, you will as soon as nobody else wants to testify? Okay. Yes, rebuttal then.
I don't know that I really have rebuttal. Mr. Mayor, at Penelope Constantakis, Riley Planning Services, Post Office Box 405, Boise, Idaho, 83701. I did want to encourage you to remember that the C2 zone that we're asking for this evening does not allow residential development. And Mr. Clegg did reference the time element that's involved. Just the dealing with the canal, I mean, the Board of Control will accept construction drawings up to November, and then it is about 12 months before you get any information back. The other things we're going to have to travel are sewer capacity issues that are going to take some time to sort out, a traffic impact study, a full one, and then review by ITD and ACHD, and they're months out. So we have a lot of trail that we need to pass along before we even get to the question of whether or not there would be residential development, which would require a rezone application to begin with. So, I did two neighborhood meetings, and I'll probably have more as we move through the process to continue to visit with the neighbors.
you know, I'm happy to answer any questions. I want to encourage you to remember that the residential, like Douglas said, was there to buffer the neighbors. There's other ways that we can create buffers, landscaping, different kinds of use of plant material is very effective. So what questions can I answer for you?
I'll raise my hand.
Yeah, go ahead.
Not to be snarky, but if you have so many hurdles in front of you, why try to bring this in before us now?
Mayor, councilman, because we have to have the foundation in place before we start these other items. We have to know what kind of traffic we're going to generate before we can do a TIS. There's so many things that have to, it's an incremental and it's a very linear process that we're going through. In order to be able to actually secure future commercial development, we have to have the site annexed and zoned. We can't move forward with anything else until that's done. And it does have a long horizon because there are a lot of steps involved. But we have to pour a foundation first, and that's what's before you this evening.
Okay, and then, so did I understand then that the gentleman there is asking that if there is residential, it be 55 and older? Is that?
That was an, excuse me.
I mean, are you on the same page
yes,
with that?
Yes, Mayor, that is correct. When I did both the neighborhood meetings, we talked extensively about that over 55 townhouse project along the east property line. One of the things that demographics seem to indicate is that there are retired people who would like to live here in the CUNA area so they can be close to their grandchildren, but the options are minimal. And these are folks that want to play with their kids and go to the pool. They don't want to keep track of a quarter acre lot on the weekends. So the idea was to broaden the housing type configuration in CUNA, which would allow more retired people, grandparents, to come to the area. And Douglas is quite connected to the senior housing business, so he's the ultimate authority. But we were trying to do the right thing by including those two elements, the over 55 and the residential. But if the city doesn't want them, we don't have to put them in. It's a very easy answer. Ultimately, you all decide what will and won't occur in general categories on the site to begin with. But like I said before, we have to pour the foundation before we start framing, and that's what's before you this evening.
Okay, thank you.
Question?
Yes, go ahead.
So if I understand what you're saying, when it comes to the residential portion of this, you're willing to be flexible on what is going to go back there.
Mayor, Councilman, that is correct. And in order to activate or even begin the discussion of a residential element on the site, we will have to submit a rezone application and go through the whole process again. So I'm encouraged by that because it gives the city and the residents around the site and residents in general lots of opportunities to talk about those particular items, residential and schools. So, and I come from a family of school teachers, and I was a substitute teacher. So I understand somewhat. But anyhow, in order for us to even begin to talk seriously about residential, there's a lot of underlying work that would have to be done that isn't on the table tonight. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. But you know as well as I do that once we annex this in, it's a different ballgame as far as what gets put on a plat. Because once it's annexed, it's annexed. We have to go through a lot of planning and zoning issues.
Mayor, Councilman, I spent 8 years on a board, a planning board. And I've been a regional and a private sector planner. So I've pretty much worn all the hats that are involved. The city doesn't abdicate their ability to say yay or nay to different kinds of uses on the site after it's annexed and zoned. The C2 zone is what's allowed in a C2 zone is specifically identified in your zoning code. So if it's annexed and zoned this evening, then what's on the table for uses is what's allowed in your zoning code. Any discussion about residential would require a rezone application, which the Planning and Zoning Commission can recommend denial of and the City Council can deny. So there's no you're not abdicating any authority to guide what will occur on the site. The rezone, the annexation and zoning applications allow the developer to go acquire the anchors that will make the rest of it happen, whatever that is.
Okay.
Any further questions for the applicant?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
C2. Everything is C2. Am I missing anything?
No, I just went back and looked too.
So then it does have to come back for
I would think so.
A rezone.
No, they can't just put residential. Right.
Perhaps that's a good question for Jessica Reed. Well, whereas everything is C2, as far as I can see on this, that means they do have to come back before any residential can occur. Is that correct?
That is correct. Typically, we would see a rezone application accompanied by a preliminary plat to actually lay out the lots, streets, common lots, parks, things like that that may be required as part of the development, as well as a design review. Should that application come forward in the future, and it's recommended denial by the commission, as Ms. Penelope Constantakis had said, and the council agrees and denies, there it is. It remains a C2.
Okay.
And so the C2 application right now is so they can go out and start trying to get commercial interested and possibly develop.
Correct. Our land use table, as we call it in city code, it has specific lists of what can and cannot be done within a zone. Something that's allowed in a neighborhood commercial, like, you know, maybe a dog groomer, wouldn't allow an expansion of that use in a C1 area commercial to be a full dog boarding kennel. Maybe that's only permitted in a C2 or a C3 with an approved special use permit, which is an additional application. That land use table is very specific about what is not permitted, and what has to go through an additional application process for approvals to even operate in that zone.
Thanks. Thank you, Jessica. That was a very good explanation. I appreciate it.
Fresh out of questions.
I'm good.
Yes, you are.
I'm good.
Mr. Laraway?
No questions.
I wish there was something, like somebody I could ask this question to.
We've got a couple people here.
Well, I know, but I don't want to put it in the wrong lap. But I'm just questioning.
Ask the question, we'll find somebody.
The gentleman in the back, what I was targeting, but I'm just curious. If we were speaking
55 and older type community, is there a history that says 55 and older would rather rent or buy? That's my thought process. Because to me, if they're willing to buy, that puts everything in the residential, where if they have to rent, we keep it under the C. No?
Any type of, for the record, Doug Hansen, Planning and Zoning Director, any type of use with a residential component would have to come under residential zoning, whether it be for purchasing or renting. They could not, you could not propose a senior housing in a C2 zone.
Or like an apartment complex.
That's what I was wondering.
Right.
Yeah, yep. No, it'd be an R20, I think.
So this is all C2.
Yep, so at this point, any type of housing would not be permitted on any of these parcels, if approved.
That led to my question of the senior living. Do they buy or do they rent? I don't have a statistic on that. But if they buy, we can't do it. Because it becomes residential, right?
Well, any of it's residential.
It's still residential.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I answered my own. I'm good. I listened to myself. I'm good.
Did you have any further questions for yourself?
Myself?
Yeah.
That's too good.
Mr. Biggs, you're good? Okay, then. Be that way. I would move we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
I'll second it.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries.
So many up in the airs.
It is, but where it's C2 and it has to come back before us, it's kind of a different situation.
Right. That's where the school district, again, would get to weigh in on that situation. Because as stands now, there would be no concern in the school.
Right.
As I...
And you do need more commercial to offset some of the tax base that the current residential...
Yeah, definitely paying. Need commercial. But when you look at the... When you look at the drawing on page 53, though, it tells a totally different story, and I totally sympathize with the school and everybody else who testified here on that in that regard.
Yeah, the way it looks in there is like a mini village.
And the other thing about when I was thinking about 55+, we just had that subdivision last year, Falcon Crest South, with all 55+. There's a chance this may not be 55+, because when they study the demographic of the city, they may not support it anymore. With that many units, I think I can remember what it was. It was quite a few.
A lot. Yeah. I mean, I'm no expert, but this one has favorable quantities to it, or qualities to it, because of, look at the amenities so close to it. I mean, they can, besides what's in their neighborhood, they can walk across the street to tons of different shopping and dining, and I don't even know what's all in there. Get your teeth cleaned and your dog groomed and everything all in one stop there. So it is more favorable than out at Falcon Crest, unless you're a golfer, I guess. I don't know. And
it still could be regular homes, too. I mean, it could be.
Sure, but
or apartments,
that's got to come back to us and whatever. So
or townhomes.
Is just giving them the okay to go find. I mean, they may not even find anyone, end up selling it, and then it comes back to us for something else.
Yeah,
true.
So,
because it has, I think, already been that way before with this project. I mean, it's been ongoing for years now.
Residential to commercial, though.
There's quite a few, unfinished issues like she mentioned with the
canal
and the sewage.
Oh, yeah, that'll have to be
worked out with P&Z.
John, do you have any other concerns?
Who are you asking?
You.
Which me?
Which shoulder are you asking?
I just, I always concern myself with these type of decisions because this annexation... Once the foot gets in the door, it becomes a different creature. Because they have planning and zoning laws that we have to follow. We have planning and zoning issues. And I don't know if it ever turned out the way I thought it would. I love the commercial. I love it. I love the photos they had on there. It was almost like a mini village over here. But when you start talking about, you know, the apartment complexes and the townhouses overlooking somebody's backyard, and I'm not a big proponent of that. I love the commercial. I do. But again, this is we don't know what it's going to turn out to be. It's just a preliminary. I'm done talking myself.
But again, they do have to come back for a rezone for it to be.
Okay.
Okay.
What do you think, Mr. Biggs? Any more questions?
Well, based off the testimony right now and what the school district said, it would be hard for me to support, because that's as it is on the table with their understanding. Of course, like you said, we weigh in. Otherwise, I mean, it's going to be all commercial one way. If we proceed on, we're just going to be kind of ignoring that, I guess, and saying, yep, it's all going to be commercial, so there are no school district issues. I just don't like the fact that it's not.
That's not what you're seeing on the picture.
Yeah, exactly. I'm seeing something different on the paper. So that's I had that, probably that same kind of issue that, you know, Councilman Lairwood has.
And they could have put all the houses over here. It's still, with it being commercial, they couldn't do anything with it.
Right.
And then it will come back in front of us. I think with the commercial, like I said, it offsets some of the, we need more commercial tax base. We're, what, 90% residential?
Yeah, we were just talking about this last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, I think one reason you can't see an actual what it's going to look like is there's such a variance of what it could look like based on who's going to come in there and who's going to build.
Who they sell it to.
You might have three of the big ones and one little one and four medium. I mean, so the pictures on there are just
hopefuls.
What they anticipate it could look like, but yet it depends on who the user is as to what it will actually look like. So,
right. Not to look at this as a worst-case scenario, but isn't it possible that if we approve this, they could come back later, 90% of this could be apartments?
No,
because we'd have to rezone it for that, and then that's when we would have us.
And the school district said they really didn't have any problem with the commercial. It was residential, but they weren't.
Yeah, I mean, that's some good commercial tax. That's why I'm torn between. That's a lot of money for the school district and us.
Okay. Any more questions?
No. I mean, I think where we have the control over a rezone potential later, no, that makes it clear in my head that right now it's okay to do.
The rezone, John, is like an annexation. They both follow under the, Doug, under the same.
Yeah, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning Director. A rezone can be denied based on a political subdivision's ability to serve it. So if they wanted to present some form of residential other than 55-plus, for instance, and the school district could not support that, that could be the basis of your denial, that it couldn't be supported by the school district at their capacity.
I was going to ask the attorney. I just didn't know his name.
Okay. Well, it has, but it does have to come back for residential 55 and older or
anything. That's correct.
Any residential.
Is there any reason that, I guess we're speaking hypotheticals here, is there any reason if they back out of the residential if it gets denied? They say, all right, well, we aren't going to do commercial either.
Well, then still a C2.
Yeah, it's still
zoned. It's still zoned, right?
Yeah, for C2 for commercial.
Then they sell it to someone else and they move forward with it as a C2, I guess.
Or they, even then, if they sell it to someone else and they want to put residential, they have to bring it back to us again. So. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
You're good. John, are both of your shoulders good?
Just his back.
I'm talking to myself. Give me a
minute. Okay, all right.
I mean, I see one way to solve one of the problems. And again, this isn't my job. But if the townhouses that they're talking about were to the north side, there's nothing over there. There would be no neighbors going, hey, I don't want them looking in my backyard. That's not my job. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah.
And stop doing
it. And they're not bringing it here.
Yeah. So stop doing it. Yeah,
okay.
Mike.
Okay.
Okay.
I think you read it. Okay. I would move we approve case number 2202AN. 2201ZC, 2202DA, with the conditions listed in the pack.
I'll second it.
Motion is made and seconded for approval. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Yes.
All right, Chris, would you poll the council on that one?
Yes, sir. Councilmember Bruce.
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs.
Yes.
Councilmember Larraway.
No.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
All right, and that motion carries. Next, we have.
Thank you to everyone who spoke.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Next, we have an Arbor Day proclamation. Thank you, everyone, for your testimony. We appreciate that very much. Whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for planting of trees, and whereas the holiday called Arbor Day was first observed with the planting of more than a million trees in Nebraska, and whereas Arbor Day is now observed throughout the nation and the world, and whereas trees can reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil by wind, water, and lower our heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. And whereas trees are a renewable source, giving up paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products. And whereas trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community. And whereas trees, wherever they are planted, are a source of joy and spiritual renewal, now therefore I, Joe Steer, Mayor of the City of CUNA, do here proclaim November 16th as Arbor Day in the City of CUNA. I urge all citizens to celebrate Arbor Day and support the efforts to protect our trees and woodlands. Further, I urge all citizens to plant and care for trees to gladden the heart and promote the well-being of this and future generations. Dated this 15th day of November in the year 2022. All right, next we have the Small Business Saturday Proclamation. Whereas the government of the City of CUNA, Idaho celebrates our local small businesses and the contributions they make to our local economy and the community, and whereas according to the United States Small Business Administration, there are 32.5 million small businesses in the United States, small businesses represent 99.7% of the firms with paid employees. Small businesses are responsible for 62% of the net new jobs created since 1995. And small businesses employ 46.8% of the employees in the private sector of the United States And whereas 79% of the consumers understand the importance of supporting the small businesses in their community on Small Business Saturday, 70% report the day makes them want to encourage others to shop small, independently owned retailers, and 66% report that the day makes them want to shop small all year long. Whereas 58% of the shoppers reported they shopped online with small business, and 54% reported they dined or ordered takeout from a small restaurant, bar, or cafe on Small Business Saturday in 2021. And whereas Cuba, Idaho supports our local businesses that create jobs, boost our local economy, and preserve our communities. And whereas advocacy groups, as well as public and private organizations across the country, have endorsed the Saturday after Thanksgiving as Small Business Saturday. Now, therefore, I, Mayor Joe Steer, Mayor of Cuna, Idaho, do here proclaim November 26, 2022 as Small Business Saturday and urge residents of our communities across the country to support small businesses and merchants on Small Business Saturday throughout the year.
Black Friday, Small Business Saturday.
There you go. Would anyone mind if we take a quick 5-minute recess?
I mean, I'd be really good with that.
Okay. I'm all for it. All right. Next on the agenda is year-end budget results, FY 2022, and cash report, Jared Empey.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Jared Empey, City Treasurer. I just wanted to give you guys a year-end snapshot as to what the budget results look like. These aren't 100% finalized, but I would say that they're 99% final, in that we may still have some, you know, outstanding invoices that may still arrive, but you know, that they're, like I say, the results are 99% there. As you can see, you can go through the results by fund and review those. They look very positive for our government activities, which is our general fund, our latecomers fund, grant fund, our capital projects fund, park impact fee, and police impact fee. Those funds increased on a cash basis, on an income statement basis, $11 million during the fiscal year. That was mainly due to commercial building permits, industrial building permits of about $8 million, and ARPA money that we received as part of the grant that was approved of $2.3 million, which is our second installment of that grant money that will be used for infrastructure improvements. Currently, we have that slated to be used for improving the corridor along 10 Mile to alleviate some sewer capacity issues. And so that should be, I believe that that project's slated to start this February and March, and should be completed essentially in the spring. Then we see that our proprietary funds had a net positive activity of about $4.7 million. And although we see, you know, a few items that were affected by inflation, supply chain, and we can see that those results in expense-wise were significantly higher than budgeted, such as chemicals or real estate improvements. I believe that overall we're controlling expenses and maintaining our costs. Just to kind of see some history, so in fiscal 18, at the end of fiscal 18, which would have been September 2018, our cash balance was $20 million citywide among all our funds. At the end of fiscal 22, our cash balance was $66 million. So significant financial growth, which has been a great help to our funds, especially our proprietary funds, which are made up of water, sewer, and irrigation. So essentially, back 4 years ago, the sewer fund had about $5 million, which was significantly underfunded. In fact, I would imagine that it was probably about $10 million underfunded as of that time, due to the fact that we had to build the sewer plant and the sewer rate wasn't high enough. However, starting in 2020, we were able to successfully raise the sewer rates, and we've had continued growth, which has added new users to the system and has greatly improved the cash position of the sewer fund. And as of the end of fiscal 22, the sewer fund had $12 million on hand, which is a real big help in avoiding bonds, having to go out for bond, or having to jump rates even higher. Basically, the philosophy that the city has had for the past few years is we want to be self-sustaining and avoid bonds at all, if at all necessary. And the way to do that is to make sure that we stay ahead of that, and to stay ahead of that cost curve. And I think that we're beginning to do so, and that essentially within the next couple of years, we would have erased that deficit that we had accrued over the past 10 years or so due to new growth and by maintaining a steady user rate. Then the general fund is looking very healthy. So 4 years ago, the general fund only had $2.4 million that was assigned to it. However, at the end of fiscal 22, we had $19 million. And part of that has some additional ARPA funds, so really we're looking at like $17 million. But that'll be particularly important as we move ahead due to, I believe it was 2021, House Bill 389 was a significant limiting factor. This is particularly for Councilmember Biggs. House Bill 389 essentially capped how much growth we can receive from new growth. It capped us basically at 5% growth, and anything above that, you just don't get anything for property taxes. And so having this cash balance in reserve significantly assists with that, especially since interest rates have climbed significantly. It makes it so that we can be more self-sustaining and help us to avoid some of the detrimental effects of House Bill 389 that was passed, which will be very important, especially around year 5 or year 6 of the implementation of that bill, which gets increasingly detrimental to growing cities. It doesn't necessarily hurt large cities. However, growing cities that have essentially a medium-sized population for the state of Idaho, it does significantly have detriment. So having that cash reserve definitely helps being able to mitigate many of those problems that House Bill 389 caused. Then, just as a way of information, about 2012, we entered that agreement with KeyBank, in which we would essentially pass on part of our connection fee from sewer to them in order to finance the North Wastewater Treatment Plant. At that time, we had about 4,500 connections that were required to be passed on, and currently we stand about 2,000, maybe 2,300. I'd have to go look at the exact number. So that number has decreased significantly over the past several years, and essentially we've seen most of that decline happen in the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. So that's a really good sign. It's a sign that we'll be able to retain the full measure of that connection fee and also be able to make sure that we can do all the necessary infrastructure improvements that we need to and be able to fund all of those that we need to spur job growth, to keep the user rate low, and to make sure that we have a healthy fund balance as we move forward, and we can replace a lot of the infrastructure that's aging. And even though the system is only about 12 to 15 years old, that's when things start going out. As we've seen with the North Wastewater Treatment Plant, we're beginning a stage when we have to make substantial fixes to things, which I believe Paul was going to bring forward in the contingency quest that he was going to bring forward after me. So it's important that we maintain our momentum to be able to increase the user base, because what happens is with any utility, you start out with a small user base and you kind of dig yourself into a big hole. However, as more users come on to the system, what happens is it makes it so that not as many users are shouldering that burden, and it makes it to where it's self-sustaining after a while. And so I think we're getting very close to that, and things are looking very good based on what I that's all I had. Are there any questions from the council or mayor?
Okay, questions for Jared?
No, thank you, Jared.
I actually do. I have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you see anything, any of the spending that you think that we should possibly cut back on?
Councilman Bruce, so currently some of our departments are essentially the revenue stream is steady, so anything within the proprietary funds, I mean, that's pretty much required to maintain a first world
I just didn't know if there's anything of living.
However, there are certain, so I guess to answer your question fully, so if the economy were to experience a significant decline, I believe that there's certain departments that would be affected. However, I believe that we could probably move some of those employees around. We could probably use them in different departments that are still growing. I believe that there's ways that we can control those expenses and make them efficient. On other ends, I don't necessarily see anything that needs to be pulled back on a operations and maintenance basis, because those are required to keep the system the same. One thing that we may do if we also see the economy experience a significant decline is we may reduce our capital outlay for new purchases. So, for instance, we may not, you know, buy new buildings or something like that. So that's all dependent on, you know, the exact thing that we would be looking at, but we would keep you all well aware of where we stand at all times.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
I always ask my wife, so I figure I'd at least ask you too. That was you.
Fair enough.
About spending.
All right. Thank you, Jared, very much. Item D, consideration to approve a sewer contingency request for three blowers for the wastewater treatment plant. Paul Stevens.
Mr. Paul.
This is Poole, city engineer, and I live here, I think, so you put that in the address. So. I'll read the blurb, and then Matt brought up some pretty terrible questions, which I'll try and explain and answer. And Matt's the city rent attorney for the evening, taking Mark's place. And Matt and I go way back to Wilder and various other places, so he's a really good egg, so hopefully he'll bail me out if I get stuck. So what we have here this evening, we would like to present you with a sewer contingency request to purchase three blowers for the wastewater treatment plant. These blower purchases are part of a multi-year budget item that was unfortunately missed in this year's budget cycle. These three blowers are a necessary improvement, as the current blowers are declining rapidly, and we need them in order to feed oxygen to the bacteria that treats our waste. We're kind of age discriminatory on our waste. We like to have young bugs that need lots of oxygen so they eat more stuff. So anyway, and we attached, you will find quotes on all costs acquired from purchasing and installing the blowers. It is in the city's best interest to purchase the blowers promptly in order to receive them as quickly as possible and be able to continue adequate treatment to our wastewater. And we're requesting a transfer of $583,000, and we would like to buy all three in one go. And then Matt brought up the question of bidding and that kind of thing. We're doing a sole source procurement to match the two that we're installing currently. And we'd like to buy all three right now because of an economy of scale. We're expecting a 10% price increase in January. And also, if they set up to build these, they're all unique and they're built per what we want, per what somebody else wants, and so on. So they'll set ours up, and we build three in a row, there's a significant savings for them on that. And then also, since the war in Ukraine, the lead times have gone up on everything. I think these come from Ukraine or someplace. Anyway. Did I get the right words in there, Matt?
Yeah, so Mayor, Council, Matt Johnson, City Attorney. So just ask when you make the motion that you include a declaration of sole source procurement. And you can just say for these reasons I put on the record, because compatibility of the equipment is a paramount consideration and competitive solicitation would be impractical, disadvantageous, or unreasonable under the circumstances. Thanks.
Remember what he said, because I'm going to say what he said.
we're just going to fill it in.
Okay. Yeah. I'm good with that.
Can I ask a question?
Questions.
Paul, how long do these blowers last? If you're buying three of them, is it going to have a tendency that all three are going to start going bad at the same time?
Yes, Councilman Larraway, we have several of these blowers. Yeah. We're replacing two at the moment, and so they've lasted 13 years roughly. And then every time you get a new kind of one, the salesman tells you it's as latest and greatest, it'll last for the rest of your life sort of thing, and they never do. But these have a different kind of bearing, and the blowers themselves turn some alarming amount, sort of like a turbo on your car. It runs like thousands and thousands of RPMs, like 20,000. So these have a magnetic bearing so that the heat is much less, and the actual shaft floats on this magnetic field, and so there's no actual contact between the shaft and the bearing. It's pretty unique and pretty new technology, so we hope they'll last longer than 13 years. But
I'm just curious.
How long do the current ones that are in place last? Where are they at right now?
They're 13 years old. Because that's when how long the plant's been around. So,
yeah, I'm just wondering how it got missed on the budget. Just thought out, just you know.
We have a 5-year plan, so it was on the year before this year, and then we just had a failure to communicate to put the additional pieces into this year.
Do they have a core charge, or can we rebuild the ones that we have for future use? Is there anything that those can be used for?
The ones we have now are a different type, and they create a lot of heat, and we're trying to get rid of heat, and we want these to be more. We believe these will be more effective. Last winter, we really had trouble keeping our dissolved oxygen up, and this hopefully will aid that and make it a lot better. So some of the savings you'll see are not getting fined. We haven't been fined yet, and we probably won't be. But if we drop off consistently and we don't take measures to fix the problem, then DEQ can fine us some significant amounts that will make these numbers look like not very much. So, yeah, I see where you're going as far as saving money in the long run. These are not really things we want to reuse. We want the new technology.
Got to keep the stuff cool, right?
And this is all going to come out of contingency line item?
Councilmember Biggs, so this would come out of sewer contingency. It wouldn't come out of, you know, general fund or anything. It would come out strictly out of the sewer fund.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Can you just put some cow magnets on the old ones?
It might work. We could try it.
Don't get them started.
I would try it, probably.
Yeah.
All right. Anything further? Okay.
Okay. I would move we approve the expenditure of, oh, crap, what was the number?
583,000
from the sewer contingency because this is a sole source procurement and the compatibility with their existing stuff and everything else Matt Johnson said.
Second.
All right, motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Update on CUNA Police Station, Chris Ingalls.
Thank you, Mayor. Chris Ingalls, City Clerk, for the record. I just want to give you an up-to-date on the police station. So we are out for bid. We published in accordance with state law CUNA Melbourne News on November 2nd and on November 9th, as well as the city website on October 31st. We anticipate having the pre-bid meeting on November 30th at 2 p.m. We are looking at December 13th at 3 o'clock will be the opening of the bids. From there, based on paperwork, I will either return on December 20th or on January 3rd to present you with the bid, who the lowest bidder was, a potential contract, and at that time ask you to consider whether to fund it and to approve a contract for the primary bidder. It will be lowest bidder based on that they meet all the criteria as far as there's a bid security that they have to do. There's like a whole packet. Since the bid was posted on Quest DNC, which that's the medium that we use now versus trying to do it out of an office, through architects, or anything like that, we've issued two addendums. The first addendum was a document upload of contract documents and special provisions, document upload of AIA document, a document upload with the project manual for the CUNA Police Station, as well as a statement with no document upload that the timeline of the construction start and completion date is anticipated to occur in 2023, but specific dates will be negotiated with the successful bidder in the City of CUNA during contract finalizations. That was done on November 9th. Addendum number two is today. Excuse me. And there was a document with upload for contracts, documents, and special provisions, removal of section number five on page six, a document with upload of the CUNA Police Station specification book, and the document with upload for the CUNA Police Station geotech report. And though we've discussed it before, just wanted to mention again, the anticipated costs would be covered with future impact fees. So what we have existing in the account for police impact fees, and then as additional impact fees come in, those would be reimbursed to the general fund. And I'll stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Chris?
Yes. This is more educational on my part. When you receive, the city receives these bids, mm-hmm. do we have somebody that's somewhat expert in, I know we have expert in contracts, but I mean for the building material, building quality, who reads through that?
So in response to your question, council member, they're required, when they submit the bid, they are required to meet the standards that we've put forth in the plans and in all these documents and policies that and manuals that we've provided. Okay. So they are, as our vendor, as our contractor, as our hired contract, they're required to meet the standards that we've put forth. Okay. As far as technical expertise, we hired the architect who also engaged electrical, engineer, structural engineers for the geotech, surveying. All of those experts came through as well. And so all of that is in there. and when we open those bids, they'll be reviewed, not just the price, but in the bid, in the documents itself, what we have indicated is that we, the City of Kuna reserves the right to reject any and all proposals, waive any non-material irregularities in the bids, and to accept the proposal deemed most advantageous to the best interests of the City of Kuna. So that means if somebody provides a bid with a bid bond, but they clearly don't have the equipment or the skill set or the backing, the financial backing to execute the contract to get the facility built, then we would deem that that's not in the best interest of the city, and then we would work through the legal process and go to the one, the next one that was.
And this all falls on the architect that we hired originally.
What falls on him?
The approval that the bids that we're getting are what they we put out for bid.
So if I understand your question, you're asking, is the architect going to look at the bid to make sure that the bid will build what we've designed?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. Education.
No, he won't do the contracts, though. That's these people over here.
I didn't want it to end up in Bobby's lap.
Any other questions?
Anything further?
Thank you.
No, thank you.
I want to thank Chris for really being the lead coordinator on this. Some of the bidders have needed some assistance in getting through their bids, and she's really done a fantastic job keeping them online. And she's had a lot of help with actually the design and figuring out the building from the police department and Bobby and Jared and everybody else, but really has coordinated this process and made it go quite smoothly. So thank you, Chris, for that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Matt Clifford, he was pretty excited about the building. He said for the longest time they only throw you in like a storeroom or something all over the rest of the place. They get like a small area. He's pretty excited about the building here.
Yeah, good.
I think it's going to be a beautiful facility, and the mayor's right. I mean, Ada County Sheriff's Office, the technical experts were involved in the design process as well, so that we'll do it. Bobby's team, they've been at all the meetings. I mean, we've had an excellent team putting it all together, so for sure.
Thank you.
Bobby hasn't done anything, but his team has done a lot.
Well, if you look at it this way, you'll be the first police department contract-wise to have their own building.
Yeah, that's what he's...
Eagle's still in the old fire department, right?
That's correct. Councilman Laraway, the Star is actually in the process of moving into a new building, but yeah. It's still going to be owned by the fire department.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations.
Thanks, sir.
And we're going to have a big open house. Everyone's expecting.
Yeah, you got to come.
I would like to add that you are all welcome to our current building if you really want to see where we're at. Chris was there the other day, so.
I want to mention to Bobby that the new golf cart, they don't have a blanket on it when it snows. It was wet.
He offered to let me store it. But our middle school SRO uses it every day around the middle.
Can we get him a hood or something?
Yeah, I don't care if he's cold.
Poncho him.
All right, very good. That takes us down to mayor council announcements. Did anybody have anything they wanted to mention? I will say I was saddened to, for the first time, miss the high school Veterans Day assembly. But the reason that I did was we are fortunate enough to be the site of the new St. Jude's Dream Home. And that's where I was instead, and doing the groundbreaking for that. So they expect to, I was really amazed, they sell like 20, I don't remember, a couple of thousand of tickets, and they expect them to be sold out in about 15 minutes.
Jeez.
And so the proceeds from that house will, they're estimating, will net St. Jude's. It will be a new record this year. I believe it was $2.3 million to help with cancer research for children.
So, very good, awesome.
It's fantastic to have that in our city. They're actually building that out here in one of the phases of the Falcon Crest Golf Course. So, and then last week, anybody who didn't hear, the Boys and Girls Club announced that they will be building their facility in CUNA, and building department and Morgan and a lot of folks are going to be helping get that process going. And it was really, really good. We went to Galaxy. It's over by the Wahoos and that there at Meridian on the freeway. And
yeah, shout out to
a really nice
CSB. $4 million they put in.
Yeah, CS Beef Packers put us. They had been getting very close, and then CS Beef Packers put up $4 million to get us over the top and get us going. So that is finally coming to fruition. I believe that there are several people on that that have been working on that for 17 years.
Yeah, that was crazy
so
to see.
Finally seeing that happen is joyful to almost to the point of tears. So very excited about that. So a lot of good things happening here. And
Mr. Mayor, the CUNA Kiwanis has been established.
Yes, that was the other thing.
I know their first meeting is, well, you all right, Chris?
Yes.
I know the Heimlich. I got you're choking.
Their first meeting is Thursday at 7 a.m. at Ross Elementary. Breakfast is supposed to be provided. But if anyone doesn't know what Kiwanis is, it's a club group about kids, and they're going to establish a key club in the high school. I think it was a K club in the lower level schools, and they just help fund a lot of kids' projects. I know when I grew up, where I grew up in Montana, they had a Kiwanis K club in my high school, which I wasn't part of. I wasn't quite good enough, I guess. And then they had the baseball park was Kiwanis. There was a track meet that was sponsored by the Kiwanis. And they're looking to do similar projects here, you know, in conjunction with Boys and Girls Club and Parks and Rec, and I think it's a really good thing. I know you're the first member. I'm also a charter member, so they're looking for more people in the community to join.
That was just because they hit me up first, and they were really tricky about how they got me to pay them.
Yeah, it was a little tricky with me as well.
They kind of hung me out.
His English was so the vice, was it the vice? He's the international vice chairman of Kiwanis is here from Korea or via Indianapolis, and it was kind of hard to follow what he was saying a little bit, and then, okay, well, here, ready to sign up?
Whoa.
I thought it was about something else. But
yeah, that was very good. Anything else? All right. With that, meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.